Welcome back to Cold Fusion Muse. This is our third podcast on the subject of security, and at this point we're going to start getting into some of the security that relates to your actual system and your actual application. And we'll be starting to tap back into the Cold Fusion world. Many of the lessons regarding Cold Fusion will also apply to other app servers. So if you're a listener that's not involved in Cold Fusion, you may find some things in this podcast that can benefit you as well. Let's review for just a moment. We have come up with a new metaphor for dealing with security. It's called the security pyramid. The security pyramid starts with basic needs at the bottom, like border agents, and it tries to answer the question of what does it take to make you feel safe, and then uses that as a metaphor for your network and application security. So in order to feel safe, we have to have something to protect us from outside intrusion, a safe country. For that, we have border agents, and on the network, those border agents represent things like firewalls and hardware devices that filter content and keep bad stuff out. In addition, we also need policing, and we need a people policy, civil services, a social circle, those kinds of things in our daily life to feel safe. And on the network, those things consist of the internal network security policy and the way the network inside is configured. Today, we're going to consider the fact that you don't just need border agents and you don't just need policing and civil service, but you also need personal space and you also need your health to feel secure. Just because you're safe from foreign nations and just because you're safe on your streets in your city doesn't necessarily mean you feel completely personally safe. In order for you to feel really safe, you need a safe neighborhood and a safe home, a shelter. So on your network, when you talk about safety in terms of personal safety, you're talking about the environment that your actual application exists in. So in terms of what we want to talk about, we want to talk about the neighborhood of your application, your application neighborhood, where your application lives. And by neighborhood, we mean the systems, your application itself, the server that it's on, and the operating system, and the systems with which it interacts directly. And this is where planning your application is really important. It's important to plan where it lives and to define exactly what controls are in place for the security of your whole system. So we have a number of points to make on that level. The first point is that you have to define your level of exposure. Now, in terms of web servers, some web servers are set up as bastion hosts. They're segmented away from the internal network, and they are, exposed to the outside, which all of them are, in terms of, at least HTTP and SSL traffic, and maybe other protocols as well. So setting a bastion host up means that you stick a server in a DMZ, and a bastion host means it has a higher level of exposure to the public intranet. And in case you don't know what a DMZ is a configuration device on your network that creates a separate subnet on your network that is firewalled away from the rest of your network. And only certain protocols and only certain access is allowed from your inside network to your DMZ. Even though you're running a web server as a bastion host inside a DMZ, that doesn't mean there's no firewall protection for this server. It just means that it has a higher level of exposure, and that's the idea behind a DMZ, is to not leave the servers completely exposed, but to segregate them because you know that they're going to have a higher level of exposure, and theoretically the risk of intrusion, if it happens inside the DMZ, is still outside of your internal network. And I say theoretically because configuring a DMZ correctly, what happens is people set up a DMZ and have their internal network, and they say, okay, great, now I've got all my traffic and all my server segmented away from my internal network, my exposure is less. But then somebody comes along and says, hey, my application doesn't work. And the network administrator says, well, okay, why do you think it doesn't work? Well, I can't connect to it correctly from inside the network. Oh, okay, well, let's configure the firewall so that you can. And we're going to open ports A, B, and C to do that. Okay, and then And then the next department comes along, and the next department, pretty soon, you have a firewall that looks more like Swiss cheese. You have a number of holes poked in the firewall to get DMZ traffic from your internal network to your DMZ and back again. And the DMZ becomes less useful at that point. So DMZs work best when the applications that are hosted in the DMZ are not mission-critical internal applications, but rather things like websites and customer-facing tools that are that are necessary. In the new world, service-oriented architecture with web services may allow us to configure the firewalls more strictly and only allow a very limited number of ports open, but you know, you can imagine that that comes with its own set of service-oriented architecture, SOA, comes with its own set of security issues that will have to be addressed as that technology progresses. So, anyway, define your level of exposure. What kind of exposure does your application need, and how do you define where it lives? Okay. The next thing is to define the rules between the systems that are accessed. In our case, we most often talk about web applications on a Cold Fusion server. So we have to talk about, we have this web application, it exists on a server, we know that. We've got to configure the server, we'll talk about that in a moment. But in addition to that, this web server will also need things like JDBC connections to a database server. It will need things like maybe an FTP connection. It might need HTTP access. It might be running web services. It might have a JMS connection. It might be using some proprietary files on some other server, and so it needs UNC paths. So just because it's by itself and you've done a good job of configuring the server doesn't mean it doesn't have an effect on the other items in your system. You have to consider, you have to audit each application and determine what external resources, external to this application, are necessary for this application to run correctly. I have a good example of that, one that always surprises me every time I run into it. But on a number of enterprise-level web applications using Microsoft SQL Server and other servers, I have found that the most typical way that a database or that a server administrator will set up a JDBC connection or an ODBC connection is by using the SA username. Why? Well, because he knows it'll always work, and he only needs one username and one password. The problem is that SA is a very special user on a Microsoft SQL Server, and it's the server administrator user. It has access to all the resources of the SQL Server and all the things that a SQL Server can do, including create tables, including dropping tables, including manipulating data in any way possible, and including even running shell commands using internal stored procedures that allow access to the shell on the server. So basically, when you use SA as your login for a JDBC connection on a Cold Fusion server, you're opening up your database server to anything that someone with access to code can do, whether accidentally or on purpose. You don't want to do that. You want to create separate users for your JDBC connections. Now, in some cases where I have similar applications, I think it's okay to pool to create a single user and give it access to, database A, B, and C, especially if those tend to work together. I think that's okay. But you don't want to simply open up your database and your master database and everything else using the SA password. So that's a good example of someone who hasn't done their homework, and their server may be rock solid and secure, but their database connection is completely open and exposed. Another example, watch out for remote services. Remote services allow a high level of access. In the Cold Fusion world, Cold Fusion servers on the enterprise are often set up by server administrators. In fact, in some places, there is a defined role, and developers never have access to server configuration issues. It's all done by a server administrator. Well, the problem with that is sometimes that the developer knows more about Cold Fusion and how it's set up than the server administrator does. If you know about, for example, the protocol RDS, you know that it's set up by default on a Cold Fusion server, and that it works through port 80, which means that it's going to be a stealthy protocol running on your network, and it allows full access to the file system. So if you don't know about RDS and you set up Cold Fusion Server and you do all your homework and, you know, all your login permissions, everything else is all set up correctly, but you don't know enough about RDS to be able to spot it as a backdoor into your file system, then your server is still exposed. And that happens quite frequently. So one of the things you need to do, speaking of setting up your server, one of the things you need to do when you set it up is to remove all unneeded services from your server. Why are you running the print spooler? You know, why are you running MS indexing? Is it a file server? Is it a print server? Extra services just slow your server down and provide additional targets. So you want to make sure that only the services that are absolutely needed are running on your server. And it's been said, I'm going to refer to a Windows server at this point. It's been said by numerous people that it's impossible to secure a Windows server. I hear that all the time, especially from Linux junkies. You know, and I have nothing against Linux. We run Linux here, and I think it's for certain uses, it's a marvelous choice. But it is possible to secure a Windows server, to make it equally secure with a Linux server and equally stable. The problem is that Windows servers are installed in the default configuration. People throw them up there and just simply install them in the default configuration, and that configuration includes many, many, many unneeded services like those listed above. If you allow a Windows server to be installed with all the things that it can possibly do, you're going to end up with a server that broadcasts a lot of friendly services, some of them insecure, to the surrounding network. Instead, you want to install the server with no services except those you specifically need. Change any username and password that exist in the default to something else right away. Document your changes in a logbook. What we use is a three-ring binder with a section for each of our servers, and we just use a pen and paper and document the changes as we make them. Make a note each time you change your configuration. One side benefit of having a server with a very narrow set of services, this is something you may not have thought of, but if you set up a Windows server this way with only the things that it's supposed to do on it, then you end up being able to ignore a whole lot of patches and a whole lot of security patches and fixes that come down the pipe. You know, we have a SQL database server that's set up without IIS, without FTP, without media services, without file sharing, without DNS, blah, 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 blah. And in other words, it's just a Windows kernel, networking, and SQL Server. And that's it. It's all it's on. And I can tell you, it runs for months at a time. The only time we reboot it is when we want to clean it, when we want to blow the dust out of it or move it to another rack or something like that. So, if you don't have Media Player 9 installed, you don't have to patch it, and you can ignore a lot of patches. Maybe 75-80% of the patches that come down are patches that are related more to user-friendly items like the browser, media services, the media player, and things like that, than they are related to the services that this particular server is providing. So don't settle for the default installation on the app server or the database server. And speaking of the application server, it surprises me how many people simply install ColdFusion Server in the default configuration and expect it to perform, correctly and do all the things it's supposed to do. You have got to tweak that server. You've got every configuration is different. And every time you install ColdFusion Server, it's going to require changes for security, for optimization. You're going to fine-tune the JVM. You're going to disable RDS. You're going to change the service account. You're going to set up sandboxes. You're going to disable unnecessary tags. You might be configuring multiple instances, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So default installation, bad. Fine-tuning, good. Okay? And part of that installation is the domain service security. On a Windows server, you know that ColdFusion installs as a service. The service comes bundled as a service running on what's called the local system account. That's the installation by default. The local system account has access to all the files and services of the local machine, the server, on which ColdFusion is installed. It doesn't have access to any resources on the domain or external to the server, at least the service doesn't. And for example, the ColdFusion service cannot access external file resources via UNC paths. because, you know, to get to those file shares, a username and a password to those resources would be required. So this level of access is restricted in that it allows no access outside the local machine. And that's restrictive enough in most cases to minimize damage that could be done to just that machine. There are some exceptions, but it does expose, the local system account does expose just the application server itself. Another option you have is to change the service to run under a local user account. So you would go into the services control panel, click on the login tab for that service, and change to, you know, create a user and change to run under just that user. So you would create a user, set appropriate permissions, blah, 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 and then change the user. Using this method, you can effectively restrict ColdFusion to just a subset of resources that exist on this server only through the use of file permissions and other ACLs. So that's the way to go if you're really wanting to be restrictive, is a local user account. And then the third option you have is a domain user account. Using a domain user account can be helpful if your server needs access to Active Directory resources that are on the domain, but they're not on this server. You should be very careful when you do this. When you choose a domain account, you are opening up your domain to the app server, and you need to recognize that. So make sure that you're using groups and users appropriately, that you're explicitly authorizing individual resources. In other words, don't just give up on getting it right and authorize whole file systems for access by your app server. And getting domain permissions right can be very challenging, and it's tempting to give up. But through trial and error and through setting permissions and testing, you can make this work. It should be noted at this point that getting service permissions right for your application server is just one part of, well, what you need to look at. Database connections are a very important, my phone is ringing, are a very important part of almost every application. And it does you no good, please guys, answer the phone. It does you no good to implement a restrictive policy with your service accounts if your database connections are wide open to shell commands and DML, as we discussed above. Other external access implemented in code can contain separate permissions in the application code or in config files. For example, there might be FTP calls, there might be LDAP calls, there might be JMS running. So never treat your application as a cookie cutter installation. Always do an audit, figure out what resources are needed, and configure them accordingly, and make sure that you know what access is necessary, and you're setting only that access. And while you're at it, something that's sometimes forgotten, don't forget to secure the ColdFusion administrator. Don't allow anonymous access to the ColdFusion administrator. Put it on an internal network only site with no external access, and make sure you disable anonymous access, and make sure that it's restricted from use from the outside web. One of the things about that is anybody with access to code on your server, external developer or whatever, in the CF5 world can get access to your ColdFusion administrator account. That's why the non-anonymous access is important. There's an unencrypted tag out there that's widely available that allows you to just unpack that username or that password and log right into the developer's account. So we've come full circle, and we're finally at the question that the Ask a Muse user actually asked, which is, how do I communicate about securing my application code? So in our final podcast, we're going to talk about cross-site scripting, SQL injection, session hijacking, and those types of things, and some of the things you can do to secure your actual code. So until next time, thanks for listening. This is ColdFusion News.